Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. The title of today's show is Leclerc's Premature Donuts for the Tifosi. That's suggested by Phil B. Scrolling on Twitter. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Reddy, and welcome to the San Marino Grand Prix race review. No, wait, it's the Formula One Rolex Grand Premio del Made in Italy, El del Emilia Romagna 2022 race review. And in a sprint weekend that certainly delivered another chapter in an intriguing 2022 season, we saw Red Bull break serve in Italy as the champions struggled once again to find pace. So coming up, we'll discuss what did Red Bull do right. We'll discuss what Ferrari didn't do right, McLaren's quiet recovery, and George Russell shining through Mercedes' woes. And the sprint race. Do you love it? If so, why are you wrong? And what does this race say about the future of DRS? We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. I'm joined on the show by Matt Two Rumpets.
Currently not Googling how to illegally make your cart faster without getting caught.
Kyle Power.
Cautious safety or intentional DRS experiments.
And Chris Catman Turner.
Looking forward to a sprint of a podcast.
Oh, very nice. That's your panel. Catman, Kyle, and Matt Trumpets. Now, on the show, what we started doing last season was starting with a big ticket event or something of a discussion point. So we got one delivered to us on lap one, turn one, and it gave us our first opportunity to play a game.
Whose fault is it?
Now, don't worry, we are going to get deep into the tyre strategies. We're going to get into the absolutely fantastic Red Bull 1-2, where I really think they schooled the rest of the field today in nearly every area. But we do like to start with something big, and we'll start with this racing incident. At Missed Apex Podcast, we have the opposite of a no-blame culture. We have a full-blame culture. There's no such thing as a racing incident in Missed Apex, Matt, and I think that policy, which I have learned through my toxic marriage, is one I want to continue.
Yeah, it makes for an entertaining show, and it's always correct. If you look deep enough, there's always someone who at least legally should have been responsible for whatever disaster just happened.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not even who should have got penalized. Sometimes it's who could have avoided the accident, yep. Who was most to blame for the accident, and who would have made their own team most unhappy with their role in that incident. So
It was Daniel Ricciardo got a good run on Carlos Sainz. I think Carlos Sainz was a little bit ahead going into the corner. It looks like Daniel Ricciardo caught a bit of curb, went out and hit Sainz. So the question I'll ask my panel is, whose fault is it? Is anyone blaming Carlos Sainz at this point? No, we'll start with you then, Kyle. Whose fault is it?
Well, more at fault than the other one, you'd have to say it was, if you're going to assign blame, yes, it would have been Ricciardo who was at fault, because Sainz left him all the room in the world. Yes, it's the first corner of a damp race start going into a chicane at Imola, but it was Ricciardo. He just caught the curb. It kicked him slightly wide, and it was the smallest of touches onto Sainz, and then they got tangled up and messy. So ultimately, I think it's a racing incident.
Oh, my God.
Got it absolutely spot on by not penalising it, but it was predominantly on Ricciardo.
Okay, what did I just say, Kyle, about racing incidents? Catman.
It's predominantly Ricciardo's fault.
Catman.
I can fight it the other way. So what we can say is that when they hit each other, yes, it looked like Sainz was giving him all the room in the world. He was right on the outside, up on the curb, just about to turn right. But actually, at the apex of the corner, Sainz was a little bit closer to Ricciardo and actually forced him up onto the curb. So that actually meant that Ricciardo, the curbs around here are absolutely treacherous in the wet, so you don't want to be anywhere near them, as we found out. And Sainz shouldn't have been that close to him.
And Matt?
Well, yes. I mean, the obvious answer is Daniel Ricciardo in the study with a curb. However,
I get that reference. It's good.
I'm glad you do. Yeah. I know this is a game that we play on both sides of the pond, so I'm glad
you're
I
safe.
Went for that one. But I'm going to note that the only reason they were there was because Sainz did not have the greatest of qualifyings, did he? And although he recovered to P4, as we saw in the race, the dirty side of the grid was very damp, and everybody on that side got a terrible, terrible start. So if you really wanted to blame Sainz for this, you could point to his qualifying on Friday is the reason Ricciardo, whose entire fault it actually was, took him out of the race at the first.
I think I'd rather address the fault once it got into the corner. Kyle, then Chris.
Yeah, going into the corner, Ricciardo was actually ahead. Sainz
was
got
he?
A really bad. Yeah. Ricciardo was actually ahead of Sainz going into the corner. It was Sainz braking later and putting a move around the outside. So I believe at the point of braking, Carlos's front wheels were in line with Ricciardo's rear wheels. So he was actually ahead from the top down view. That's what it looked like. So he put a move on, and I don't really want to give blame to anybody. If you're going to blame someone, it's going to be Ricciardo's fault. But it was just one of those unfortunate two lines converging, slight tap, slippy. They couldn't really done much more to avoid that, really.
Okay, I just want to counter that slightly, because like, I shared a picture with you guys earlier where I thought Sainz, like, was if you're right, if it was in the braking zone that he made up the time, it was a long way out from the corner. So it definitely wasn't like a lunge around the outside. I felt like as they were like getting into the apex zone, he was comfortably ahead by then, whether or not he got there, you know, by braking better. Catman.
He was, and Sainz had to brake later because Ricciardo was on the inside. He was braking really early, trying to make sure he didn't understeer outwards. And Sainz managed to get around the outside. I think he was desperate to make up for the errors that he's had in the last two races, because he's had a real shocker.
You're blaming Sainz, Catman?
Yeah, why not? I think in front of the Tifosi, yeah, you do not go out on lap one of the race. You skip the corner if you need to.
There's no way he could have known he needed to skip the corner because Ricciardo was behind him when he hit him. I just want to point that out from a logistics point of view. What I love about this incident, though, is Sainz very clearly interviewed early on is like, well, I felt like I left him really a lot of room and he hit me. And then Ricciardo post-race looking at the video going, oh, you know, I was trying to leave him all the room and oh, yeah, it was the curb. Yeah. Oh. So it's like the best of intentions. Maybe if Ricciardo would try to really squeeze him, they both would have made it around the corner okay.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Like, if Ricciardo maybe wasn't trying to be so courteous towards him, it wouldn't have happened. He wouldn't have gone on the curb and wouldn't have been kicked wide. But that's all we can kind of do in those situations. He did the right thing, and I don't think either of them would do anything different again. But just to address the start situation, Everybody on the left-hand side of the grid, well, in the first three rows, got a better start than the right-hand side of the grid. Now, I think that's because it's actually offline. That was the dirtier side, the less used tarmac. which has the actual stones of the tarmac are less polished, so it gives you more traction and more purchase. It's like in karting, when you're racing on slicks, you always go and look for the least used bits of racetrack to get the traction and the grip. So I think that's why, as the grid goes down, the racing line converged. So I think that's why we saw the first three rows on the left-hand side of the grid get a better launch.
Yeah, I think you're right. The racing line runs through those spots, and it was much drier and cleaner there for those on the left-hand side of the grid.
Okay, I think you're all being a bit too generous with Ricardo, and apologies to the Aussies, but here's what I think is that I think Carl's probably painted the picture correctly, that Sainz got ahead in the braking zone, but early enough that he was ahead and he owned the corner. If you look at the stills, which I did frame by frame, Sainz has left Ricardo enough room to get through without using the curb. They could have gone through there side by side. Furthermore, Sainz goes all the way to the edge of the track on the right-hand side. Now, I don't believe a car has to leave the track. I think the stewards are trying to go away from, say, the situation last season where Verstappen just basically hit Hamilton and Hamilton to survive had to go off. I think you've got to penalise Ricardo in this situation. I'm not saying it's a hanging offence, but I think you've got to give him a time penalty. I've never liked that there's extra slack on lap one, turn one. He put Carlos Sainz out of the race because he got greedy in that move. He could have looked at that situation when Sainz is ahead of me. A corner like that, you are modulating your brakes to a certain extent. You're not just slamming on the brakes at maximum. So there is an opportunity to brake more into those turns. But I don't think he's done that, Ricardo. I think he's given himself the maximum opportunity to overtake. So he's not just trying to avoid signs. He's trying to overtake. The curb gives him the best angle into the next corner. And there's a risk with going over the curb, and he's stuffed it and he's gone all the way out and he's ended up hitting the rear. So definitely by the time they get to the outside, he's punted the rear of Carlos Sainz and put him out of the race. I think you've got to start penalising that. I'm not saying you're a bad person, Kyle. If you did that to me, you're not a bad person, but you took a risk. It didn't pay off. You've put me out of the race. So you get a penalty.
See, I don't think he took a risk. I think it was heat of the moment. They just happened. They're going into turn one. As you say, you make a good point about the brake modulation. They're not all braking on the limit. One, because they can't see. Because they're trying
to
go into the corner.
As well, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, and he sees Sainz going around the outside, knowing full well what Sainz is going to do. And he's like, I've got to check up here. If he was taking a risk, he would have just let the brakes off and tried to go fully side by side to the apex, but he didn't. He saw what was happening, tried to adjust for it. And unfortunately, just the curb just kicked him a little bit wide. I don't think he did anything wrong.
So, Carl, who adjusted for it? Ricardo.
Ricardo.
So in control of the car, he took those decisions that ended up putting him to the outside of the exit on a chicane where another car already existed. It's entirely his fault. He's wrecked someone's race. And if you want to say, someone's saying in the live chat, it's a good point. Are you penalising the incident or the result? I think I've been clear enough on these outside of the corner things to know that I'm not just penalizing the result. But I think if you just move across track, because he's basically moved all the way from one side of the track to all the way to the other side of the track on lap one, and there's a car there, like, if that's not a penalty, what is, Matt?
Well, I think it's a matter of intent. He did not intentionally move over there and bonk it into signs. He was trying to leave room, and this is why it's his fault. It was a misjudgment round the curb that did send him into signs. And so much so that when he saw it on video, he later went to find Carlos and apologize for the incident. Okay. So, I mean,
you wanted Stroll punished for a misjudgment in his mirrors. So misjudgments can be a penalty, can't they?
Misjudgments can be a penalty. But in that case, if we're going to bring up Stroll and relitigate that, which I don't really want to do, it was Stroll actively not paying attention to what was going on around him versus Ricardo, who was very much paying attention and trying to avoid the bad result.
Well, we don't want to see all of these first lap things. And this is why they're more lenient on the first lap. As they said in the commentary, if you're penalizing that, no one's going to want to try and make a move. Now, there's a key differentiator here. He was adjusting to somebody making an overtake on him. It wasn't him having a last, like, desperate last late-braced lunge on the brakes. If it wasn't that crash that happened, if he was the one forcefully making a move, then he may well have been looking at a penalty. But it was the context going in that he was trying to get around with somebody making a move on him. It was completely unintentional. So
I think
it was the right choice not to penalise him.
That's the most generous interpretation of what he was trying to do. I will still maintain, this is Danny Rick, he loves sending it. He saw someone up the other go around the outside and he went, not on my watch, and went for it. Catman, last word from you.
Yeah, I agree with Kyle on this one. I think he was adjusting for Spanners giving him a slight, Sainz giving him a slight squeeze.
We're very similar.
And then he would have made it in the dry. Unfortunately, the curbs are slippery when wet.
Yeah, and I just think everybody has those factors available to them. And I'm all for racing drivers taking a risk. But at some point, you have to police that and go, yeah, he took a risk, but it didn't pay off. But if you want that, I mean, everyone can do that. Everyone can take a jump over the curb at turn one, and we'll just have skittles, all throughout the pack. I don't know. Look at them all advocating for the Wild West. Feedback. If you want to give feedback, matt@missedapex.net, because Matt is going to tell us where the race was won and lost. So, Matt, what I'd like you to do, if that's okay, is to talk a little bit about tyres. And I know I'm throwing this at you, I'm surprising you, I've not given you a chance to prep. But what I'd like to know, and what I'm sure some listeners would like to know, is what's the challenges facing the team once they're on the grid, it's wet, it's not raining, they're on the intermediates, then they have to decide when to change and then whether to change again later. So what was going on with the tyre strategy?
Well, you asked me this question, and I'm going to respond in an unexpected way by saying, I don't think there's a tire strategy when the weather is like this. It's a tire gamble. Now, according to Pirelli, the crossover time from intermediates to slicks was around minute 30, minute 31, and they were running that as soon as the second or third lap of the race, but no one out there felt like it was time to put the slick tires on. And here I'm going to point to this very same incident we're talking about. The reason we got the race we did was because Ricardo got punted, got back in the race, and was running at the back. And round about the end of lap 16, McLaren said, you know what? Norris is way up the field. Let's bring you in and see what the times are. And this was the gamble where a couple of people really won. And a couple of people really, really lost, amongst them Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, that was a fascinating period of the race, because what I found really interesting was I actually think the window was two or three laps before. And that was kind of half proven by Ricardo instantly setting the timing screen to light, like no warm up issues. And that's because they all thought the rain was still going to come. So they're hanging on for dear life, wanting to keep the intermediates. And this is what it was, a bit of a strange situation. I've never seen it before. And he goes, the door was wide open for someone to take a gamble, and nobody took it for two or three laps.
Yeah, and there you have the weather reports. There's going to be more rain. No one wants to come into the pits, put on a pair of slicks, and then three laps later have to put the intermediates on. So you get this interesting situation where my enters are basically done. I mean, I certainly, for the Haas, they were toast. And you've got this thing where, on the one hand, I'm trying to defend, but on the other hand, I'm having to constantly drive offline to try and keep these tires alive yet another lap.
And yeah, and the whole time this sort of sequence of the race was playing out, I had Martin Brundle's voice in my ears saying, be on the right tires at the right time. And all I needed was two or three laps lapping sort of 6 to 10 seconds off, like faster, and they would have made it back anyway. So yeah. I was really surprised they all left it so late.
Yeah, I was doing a bit of maths on there, and I thought, weren't they doing like 19s in quali? So obviously they've got full tanks, but I was looking at the times and they're going around in like 32s, and you go, ooh, you get three laps on people. Even if it rains, you're probably at least sort of even. You've bought your pit stop. Catman.
Yeah, and I think one of the tragedies of the cost cap is that we don't have the Red Bull guys sitting about 3 or 4 miles away with their fingers in the air going, yeah, it's raining over here. It'll be with you in about 5 minutes. Maybe tragedy is a bit strong, but those poor guys who used to have their jobs probably don't have them anymore.
So now looking at this, you have sort of this, who's going to jump first? And McLaren's like, oh, conveniently, we have one of our cars all the way at the back of the field where they're not going to do anything anyway. We'll jump first. But what was interesting was that his first sector time, sector two, that was properly set, was miles faster. But at that point, the entire field had pretty much gone by the pit entry, and only three midfielders chose to come in. Vettel, Albon, and Gasly, and they all benefited mightily. And I know we'll get into it later, but this, I think, was a crucial point we can talk about with Hamilton and his strategy and some of the things Mercedes might have done differently.
Yeah, and I think this is a good jumping off point to talk about what Red Bull did right. So this really was a fantastic display from Red Bull. And I know it's easy to go, well, maybe they did a car upgrade, maybe they got the setup right, but it just feels like they were strong in every single area, and that was enough to edge them away from the field. I think we could list a lot of those areas, the things they got right. You could take away one or two of them, and Leclerc is past Perez, for one thing, and then past Perez probably means, you know, maybe not the late mistake and not trying to bring everyone onto softs. So Red Bull had to, even though it looked a bit dominant from Verstappen today, I think they had to do everything right, from a good setup, a nice package, a good upgrade. The strategy was correct. Both drivers did exactly the job that they needed to do. They made the right calls on the tyres. I think, Kyle, this is as impressive a team display as we've seen for a long time. Very different from the ultra dominant Mercedes just, you know, pressing home an advantage. This is a team that wasn't a given that Red Bull were going to do that today, and they just earned it with brutal efficiency in every area.
Yeah, you're correct, and we have praised Mercedes for doing similar performances in the past, but as you say, we kind of don't expect that utter domination from Red Bull, not just yet. They may well go on to do it this season, but we don't know. But they nailed everything. Their drivers were impeccable. Yeah, apart from Perez's little gardening experience.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Apart from that, like, they were absolutely flawless. And the strategy, you know, to be fair, Red Bull usually get the strategy right. They were absolutely on it. And I really liked it at the end of the race where they instantly reacted to Leclerc pitting, got Perez in and knew his tyres were going to be a bit warmer, and he managed to get back past Leclerc, which then afforded Verstappen the opportunity to get the fastest lap and maximise their points as well. So I think Christian Horner said afterwards, minus the one position for the points in the sprint race that Perez didn't get, they were 1 point away from a maximum team points haul, which is very, very impressive.
Yeah.
So first of all, that position mattered so much because it put him on the left side of the grid directly behind Verstappen. Oh. It was the reason he was ahead of Leclerc. I'm going to start with that.
Do you know what? As the race started, and look, I'm pretty open of who I'm a fan of. I'm a massive fan of Sergio Perez. And my first thought was, oh, like, it was just felt really weird to see Perez just pull away properly and come out ahead. Normally, you know, he's not that great off the line. He'll be a little cautious and try and survive. It's a good strategy. But to see him just kind of pull away and then be in front of Leclerc, I was genuinely surprised, Matt. I thought maybe he's turned the corner on starts, and you've just ruined it for me.
Well, I mean, he still did everything right on his side, but they did have a massive traction advantage. And I think that would be hard to argue otherwise. But I want to talk about that chicane cut a little bit, because the thing that he didn't just cut that chicane.
Yeah.
He kept the throttle planted through there. He actually, I think, gained some time on Leclerc in that incident. And again, it was the correct move for that situation.
Yeah,
and because you want your track position.
Yeah, and Kyle is the closest we have to a racing driver in that you're a very good karter and a very good sim racer, and all of the rest of us aren't. So the second we get on the grass in any way, you know, we're straight off the throttle going, oh, come on, please, please, please survive. You have to be in a good place to keep it planted on the grass.
Yeah, and calm and not pinning the throttle too much. Usually my trick when I go off the when I go off the road in sim racing is do about 20-30% throttle and try and keep your wheel as straight as possible on the grass because the grass is wet. He's gone off and done that, but I don't think he escaped penalty or wasn't even investigated for it because it did put Leclerc right onto the back of him.
Yeah,
I think he cooled his tyres down. He was in a bit of a mess and a bit of a kerfuffle sorting himself out. So I don't think it was an intentional. He knew he was at all. If I don't sort this out really quickly and then either give the time up I'm going to get a penalty. And he played it just right. And he actually ended up losing time net overall with it.
I think he wasn't actively defending at the time, which helps. And his lead was significantly reduced. So he didn't gain an advantage from doing that. Catman.
He was also very lucky not to lose bits of his floor, because he did skip over. There's a lovely slow-mo of him just kind of jumping over one of the service roads, and he could have easily taken off some of the strakes underneath the car, because we know that their floor is quite complicated compared to the Ferraris. If he'd managed to damage his car, that could have put him back in the fight against Leclerc as well for the rest of the race. So he was very lucky there too.
Yeah. Kyle.
Yeah. And one thing that saved his bacon and helped him and Verstappen was, we've been seeing a lot this year, and it sounds very odd saying this, but the Red Bull is an absolute ballistic missile in straight line. It's probably the fastest car through there. And you could see, even with the might of the Ferrari PU, Leclerc was really struggling to get a run on him. And when the DRS wasn't available, he just saw the power the Red Bull had. Like in that Honda PU or the Red Bull powertrains, whatever they're called, coupled with their aero package, this car has gone from Red Bull traditionally struggling in a straight line to being the de facto fastest. And it's quite surprising to see, but that really saved his bacon when he did that chicane cut.
Well, I'm so glad you brought this up, because to me, this typifies the different approach of these two manufacturers. Now, from what I've read, it's possible that the Red Bull upgrades, particularly the front wing that they brought, have resulted in some weight savings, meaning that their acceleration curve is now more closely matched to that of Ferrari, which is important, especially on a wet weekend when the track is cold, because Ferrari running more downforce will count on running through the turns faster and having better traction out of the turn to put them farther down the track. And then Red Bull's counting on acceleration and a higher top speed to catch them at the end. The weather conditions today, irrespective of tire management, did not really favor Ferrari quite as much as they did in the sprint race, where we saw Leclerc ahead but unable to manage the tires to the end.
Yeah, actually, there was quite a lot of the race pace was different in the sprint, which admittedly I wasn't watching in as much detail because I was watching it on a park bench in the middle of a house hunt, which is like a testament to some of the strain that the extra competitive sessions have put on a family on a race weekend, because I'd already watched qualifying on Friday. So we weren't going to plan our whole Saturday around me wanting to watch the sprint race. Is a direct quote. But for example, Perez's pace was a lot better in the dry, for example. So from a driver perspective, you know, in the slightly damp, differentiating conditions where maybe Verstappen's a lot stronger, there looked to be more of a gap in performance. And of course, that will translate to certain cars technically as well, Matt. You know, Toto Wolff was talking about the effect that the cold and the damp. Last season, cold suited Mercedes, and we were worried when it got too hot because they had cooling issues. Now, if it's too cold, they can't switch their tires on at all, it seems.
Yeah, well, and this is because so many of their tire warming up toys have been taken away from them by the new regulations. All the teams are working very hard to understand how to adapt to the new regulations and get the tires in the windows where they want them across differing track temperatures. And this was a very, very challenging week. And what's very apparent is that after the graining that they suffered in Australia, Red Bull went home, did a lot of homework, and they showed up loaded for bear on Friday. They were on it all weekend. They had the setup that worked, and it worked across different temperatures and across different conditions, and better than Ferrari's, it must be said.
So I want to talk about Verstappen's performance a little bit, because after the last race, he seemed very down. People were questioning his hunger. You know, there was even comments like, oh, because he didn't feel like he earned the last title somehow, his head is down. Even Helmut Marko was making comments about Max Verstappen, saying, oh, we thought a title would calm him down and it hasn't. But I think in this race, like over the radio, there's no question at all that he was very hungry, that he wanted that win, that the motivation was there. He wasn't driving around going, oh, the engine's going to blow up anyway, so what's the point? This is stupid. And whilst he was, of course, you know, suitably aggressive over the radio, the hunger was there, the performance was there. And whilst I was watching the lap times. And any given lap, you might look at the timing screen and go, oh, Perez is around the same pace as Verstappen. And I know Perez claimed he was tyre-saving his inters, which he may have been. But Chris, the main thing for me watching Verstappen's times is the same thing that Bottas used to compliment Hamilton for, which was just this consistency. And the consistency of laps and the ability to maintain that through a stint is obviously the mark of a good driver. And that's what I was seeing today.
And that's especially hard in treacherous conditions because the grip is changing lap to lap. Yeah. And you have to go hunt for it. And that's what makes Max... He was so comfortable this whole weekend. Even when he got behind in the sprint race and was just kind of lurking like a shark behind Leclerc, he knew that he had the car and the tyres towards the end of the race. He'd clearly thought about it and planned it because towards the end of the race, he didn't panic. He just made this incredible move to get past Leclerc. It was astonishing.
It was a 5-lap slow burn that resulted in an incredible, lovely, and entirely legal without a lot of bashing pass, which, you know, I mean, there's nothing more you could ask for from a sprint race is that at the end of it, you get a pass for the lead after the leader loses it at the beginning of the race.
So this is not me being down on Perez, by the way, at all. I was just observing Verstappen's driving. And actually, the gap, for a long time, actually, it stayed pretty steady at about 2 seconds, maybe then 3 seconds, and then it sort of settled at around 6 seconds. But the difference, I think, that got the gap like that, I know Perez, it's easy to say, oh, I was saving my tyres. Yeah, maybe once you see that you can't quite keep up, was just small mistakes. It was little mistakes. The odd sector just suddenly going out. And I don't think these are the conditions where Perez tends to do particularly well and the conditions where Verstappen thrives. But yeah, you could just see that consistency. Catman.
Yeah, let's not be down on Perez because this is the first Red Bull 1-2 since Malaysia 2016.
Yeah. No, I know. But, you know, obviously being a fan of his, you want him to be pushing and challenging Verstappen. And you say, well, in order for that to happen, you've got to cut out the small mistakes. That is the difference between the drivers like Bottas in the Mercedes, who can put together an ultimate lap and are clearly fast, and then doing it consistently over a stint.
Absolutely. And Max is a very reactive driver, so he can tell the little changes in the car and adapt to them and make them work to his ability. Whereas I think Perez, he's the long game guy. He likes to play out over a stint and manage the tyres effectively. And in these conditions, it's very tricky.
Kyle, back to a racing thing. In karting, when it's wet, I throw my teddies out the pram. I've got no patience for it. I can't stand it. It's just, it ruins racing for me. But I think what you hinted at earlier, you know, about trying to, you have to go searching for the grip rather than it just being there in that place and you go for it. And I think that people always say, oh, it suits the better drivers. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but certainly some drivers are much better at those conditions and having to change your approach turn by turn.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in those conditions, the racetrack is a living thing. It is constantly evolving corner by corner, lap by lap. You're never sure of what the grip level is going to be. And you have to essentially make an informed guesstimate of where you can brake or where the grip is going to be. And we saw this during the qualifying, which wasn't the qualifying, which didn't set the conditions for the grid, but the qualifying that wasn't session, that one, we saw Verstappen's lap in there at Tosa. He didn't even bother with the inside. He took the karting line all the way around the outside because he knew that's where the grip was and he could fire up the straight. And we've always said it, the rain makes the greats even greater. Yeah, they come out, it's a great leveler, but Verstappen, you know, you've got Verstappen, and this is why I was so surprised with Hamilton's performance, even in tricky conditions. I expected him to pull something out of the hat, and yeah, Verstappen just...
Don't worry,
was a ball that was not dropped.
We're going to fight about Hamilton and Mercedes later, don't you worry, Catman.
I was just going to ask Kyle a question that I hopefully know the answer to, but how do you know where the grip is in wet conditions? You know, looking at the colour of the track surface, how else do you tell?
Well, it's generally in the wet, and we know this from, I know people don't like it when we keep talking about karting, but it's very relevant when it comes into this. If you're on slicks in the wet, this is what Senna was really great at. It's what Schumacher was good at. You know that the most used bits of tarmac, i.e. the racing line, are the most polished bits. And basically all the little individual stones in the tarmac, when they get used, the edges get rounded and it gets polished and it gets more slippery, which is great for the dry. It gets all rubber impregnated into it, but in the wet, that becomes an absolute ice rink. So you know for a fact that the racing line is going to be slipperier. That's why we see it quite a lot when it's wet at Spa and Monza. Even into the braking zones, drivers will move offline onto the dirty, what we always consider the dirty side of the track, but it's the less used. That's where the grip is. So you already know that you need to avoid the racing line. And then it's just prior knowledge and experience. So some corners, this might not be true. On certain kart tracks that I happen to know at Red Lodge at turn three, you can't do that because there's just no grip anywhere. So you need to go to the inside. And generally, drivers, you will know from your own personal intuition, from your previous knowledge, and just knowing you have this sixth sense and just know where to go looking for it. You're like, I know I need to go to the outside here. I'm not going to bother here, or I'm going to monster that curb on the inside because it's going to rotate the car. It's
Let's not talk about monstering inside curbs yet. We're not quite at the Ferrari. Not quite in the Ferrari section. Finally, on Red Bull, look, it was I was so impressed by Red Bull today, and everything that needed to be done was done, and I think they've produced a genuine performance there, nothing given. Just with Perez, I have said to you guys this season, I've seen something a bit different to last season. The style of the cars might not necessarily suit Verstappen enough to bring him back to Perez. Not quite. But the dry conditions in the sprint race, Matt, I'm not mad, am I? Perez looked really strong from, yes, a typically poor, a normal qualifying. He seems to just hate that format and not be good at it. But once he was making his way up the pack, I was looking at the lap timings and he looked phenomenal in the dry.
Yeah, and again, this is Red Bull just simply getting everything right. They got the balance of downforce to top speed right. They've got the car energy worked out correctly. And I think this is just absolutely key. Like, you know, we saw Magnussen say, oh, my tires dropped off after lap 11, which I think was down to Haas having not the greatest setup for tire management, if I'm being honest. But he expected those mediums to come into it by the end of it. Red Bull, no, they were just faster and fastest. They had a setup that really protected the tires and gave them the best overall time for those 21 laps, and there was nothing anybody else could really do about it.
All right, let's have Carl's wish and talk about monstering over curbs. Listen, Ferrari fans, listen to the sound of my voice. I'm not your enemy right now, not this season. I know we've had a checkered past together. I understand. I'm not expecting all that hurt to be healed. All I'm saying is that your enemy's enemy is your friend. And I am gunning for Ferrari. Oh, that hurts. And Leclerc in this title fight, just from a fan point of view, you know, you pick a horse to bet on and to support. And I think I'm kind of weighing in and wanting Ferrari to do well in this battle. But my goodness, they have a reputation for Ferrari-ing. They have a reputation in modern Formula One for snatching victory, snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. And when everything is looking like it's going right, they have just a remarkable capacity to break the hearts of the Ferrari fans. There's no glee in my voice. I'm not. Oh God, I've just looked on the video. I am smiling. I'm not meaning to be. Stop smiling, Spanners. But it's heartbreaking. Who's the closest we've got here to Tifosi? It's probably you. No, it's Kyle. Kyle, you're the closest. You're a Schumacher fan. Yes, you were.
I was never a Ferrari fan.
Wow, you're a Schumacher fan. One and the same. You can't pick and choose between that. I'm sorry.
I'm allowed to be a fan of a driver and not a team. It was really unfortunate. Charles, we haven't seen these little mistakes that he's been quite accustomed to. And I think it was only last race review, I think we were mentioning that we haven't seen these mistakes that he's been making. And all of a sudden, this one took too much, man. He just took too much of that curve going into the Arianti Bauta. And yeah, he was pushing, but fair play. Like he could have settled for third. He's got he's a championship leader, and he had a carrot dangling in front of him, and he just absolutely threw everything at it. And yeah, it didn't quite pay off, but respect for still pushing and not just settling for third.
This is the thing that lost him out to Carlos Sainz last season. Yep. If you give him a car that has enough margin, as we saw at the beginning of the season, he is imperturbable. He will simply do you. He'll stick the knife in deep and not think twice about it. But put him on the margin and dangle a carrot, and he will drive off the track more than he should. We saw it in Monaco last season, and we saw it even in free practice, how hard he was pushing that car, because he knew at best he barely had a pace advantage over the Red Bull. And this is why Sainz makes such a great partner to him. When Daniel Ricciardo, who I will point out once upon a time drove for Red Bull,
okay,
punted him off.
Okay, so I've had some rank hypocrisy just pointed out in the chat room, Carl. I've got a feeling that's what you might be referring to.
No.
No, okay. In that case, Rush in our live chat said, Perez and Red Bull is a case in point where you can like a driver and not a team. And I've just called you out for the same thing and said you couldn't do that. So yeah, look, fair enough. Completely correct challenge. And Dave Hart says, Charles has been solid so far all season, and he just bit off a bit more than he could chew today, and it was devastating. But the thing is, Carl, we've seen it in the practice sessions where he just pushes to the limit. It's almost like watching a 1980s F1 superstar just going flat out. I'll do 110%. If the wall comes, it comes.
Yeah, he needs to make some JPS and grow a mustache, I think, if it's from that era.
Yeah.
And to sort of go it. But the reason why I think he dropped it specifically in that location and he was pushing so hard was we saw traditionally throughout the weekend that is where the Ferrari is the strongest. He was murdering the Red Bulls through the chicane.
Well, Perez particularly, yeah.
Yeah, so that was his strongest bit. So he had the carrot dangling in front of him. He saw Perez and he was like, if I can just take a tiny bit more, I can get onto him and get him. And I think that's why he overpushed in that particular corner.
Yeah, you're right. He was completely smashing Perez through there and getting right up behind. But on the occasion where he spun, you could see he wasn't just getting his wheels over. It looked like he beached a little bit and the floor took a bit of curb as well. And that was enough to unsettle it and spin it off. That chicane, Kyle, is horrible. It ruins the whole track. For me, even like, okay, when I do it on a video game, it ruins it. But it ruins it watching those guys jumping over it every single time. I'm wincing. I would prefer like something like they have at Alton Park, like just some tyres that they, or even like, you know, Monaco-esque barriers. I think that those chicanes are the worst kind of corner curbing.
Yeah, they are. And do you know what I'd really prefer? That they just got rid of it and just straight lined it all the way through to, is it the Roggia? No, not Roger. What's the corner?
Rivazza.
Well, yeah, because then you'd get another overtaking zone.
Exactly.
Yeah, you'd
get another overtaking zone. There's no, and we've seen with F1, this chicane reminds me of the middle chicane in Abu Dhabi, which just splits up the straights and actually just spreads the cars out rather than racing them. Now, that chicane has been there since I can remember forever, but there is lots of space to put a nice straight through bit of tarmac.
Absolutely.
There. And so you could I don't know why they leave the chicane.
You could be fighting through Acqua Minerale and you saw loads of cars get a really good run, but then they run out of road by the time they got to the chicane. Catman.
Absolutely.
So two things to prove why you're completely wrong. So the first one is that it provided only one of two non-DRS assisted overtakes when George Russell overtook K-Mag into that chicane.
Yes, but you say
again,
that was...
Again, because he muffed it up into turn one, but okay, carry on.
I'll tell you what, we'll go into that into a bit more detail. I'll just say quickly that obviously K-Mag was a sitting duck at that point. Catman.
Absolutely. And the second thing is the reason why they have that chicane is to reduce the top line speed into the next big stop, because they can't put a big enough runoff at the end because of those. I don't know if you saw the shots of those lovely people eating their pasta and drinking their wine on their balconies watching the racing. It's because those houses are too close to the circuit to provide decent enough runoff if they were at VMAX.
Carl?
Yeah, but there is quite a sizable gravel trap there. And also, Jeddah, where's the runoff at Jeddah? They've got really fast corners going into sort of braking zones and street circuits. So I can't see in this modern day of Formula One why they couldn't have a straight line through there. Now, some people would say this is a traditional circuit, let's not butcher it. And to be honest, the Variante Alto has been a mainstay, used to be the mainstay of the Formula One calendar in the 90s. I remember cars getting it wrong through there. So, but I would prefer to see it as a straight line.
I think it's really cool to watch the cars flinging themselves over the curbs, getting air, the slow-mo shots, you know.
We'd miss that. If you want to go and watch Rallycross with like jumps and stuff, go watch Rallycross. I don't love it. Matt.
It's just like Piscine at Monaco. Yeah, it's a great TV shot, but it's not necessarily great racing.
Before we leave Ferrari, I mean, Sainz, okay, I don't think that was his fault today. So he's not really had a chance to atone for Australia, which did seem like it was his fault, but he did sort of stuff it. Did he stuff it in qualifying? Where was it? What's it? Yeah. Yeah, he stuffed it in qualifying. That was in that final section as well. So things are not going well for Sainz. He's probably put himself out of the early contention and disadvantaged himself as like the number two in Ferrari. I also have concerns with that move from Leclerc, and I know he'll be being harder on himself than anyone, but he was fighting for second place. It wasn't like a double pointer. If that was with Verstappen for the lead, that's a 14-place switch, isn't it? That's 7 points off him and 7 points on you. I get that. But for second against Perez, it just wasn't worth it. The thing is, Catman, if Ferrari want either of these titles, they need to cut that out, all of it, now.
Absolutely. He actually lost more points than he would have gained. He lost 7 points from that and had the resultant recovery. Could have lost all 15 that he potentially would have got for third place. So, yeah, it was a big high-stakes move and it just didn't work. And he was really pushing it. As you say, I think he's under pressure because Verstappen has won a championship and he knows what it takes to win a championship. He's a cool cucumber now. Leclerc has something to prove, particularly for Ferrari, who haven't won since God knows when. And I think he's under a lot of pressure, particularly at home in front of the Tifosi. He was under a lot of pressure to get to stop a Red Bull 1-2.
To an extent. But I still feel like this is how Leclerc drives the car. And I'm not quite seeing that, I don't know, would you call it the mental adjustment that we've seen so many other drivers make in pursuit of their world championship. But what we have seen is with enough margin, he's untouchable. So it's going to be, can Ferrari give him the car and the strategy to keep him out of the place that he was in today?
So when we talk about other world champions and their mentalities, Lewis Hamilton was that in his early career. He had exactly the same, where he was, you know, looking to be over the edge. You can look at 2007, and if you ignore the conspiracies that they were forced to throw away that championship because of the photocopying scandal with Fernando Alonso sending secrets over. I've forgotten what gate that was. Was there a name for that scandal?
Spygate.
Spygate, that was the one. You know, he basically, you know, he didn't get into the pit lane. I know he was left out on worn tyres, but we saw early Hamilton be very on the margin or win or bin. And then we saw Hamilton possibly going the other way too far last season, doing less risk for reward and being a little bit more conservative and letting more battles go. And maybe that cost him championship points. So it really is down to which mentality is going to suit this season, Kyle, but I'm not confident that if it continues like this, he's going to be world champion.
I think he could be. I just think he is just a general risk taker. As Matt said, this is how he drives. He pushes really hard. And this is why we see these little mistakes coming in. Now, up to this point, we haven't seen these little mistakes. That's quite a worrying sign. But I'm sure if he gets a big old lead in championship in the later stage of the title race, and he is in a nice, comfortable position, his team will be screaming at him to calm down over the radio and he will be getting talks. But at the moment, I think they're happy for him to carry on with his mega pace and his risk-taking, because I think the Red Bull, well, certainly this weekend, looked like the stronger car.
Yes, it probably was.
I think they need him to take... They need him to take some risks, I think.
Maybe, but you're saying you can't think of times? I mean, Baku just pops to the back of my head.
Baku, like before, we've seen this, where Monaco, he's made mistakes when he doesn't need to, and he sort of goes, but that's just his limit. I mean, it works the times when it doesn't.
Okay. You know what I mean? Like, so like Baku, Monaco, every Friday practice session. Camp man.
Yeah, and this is why pre-season I said that I would back Carlos Sainz to outscore Leclerc again this year over a course of a season. Unfortunately, what's transpired is Carlos has forgotten any of his talent for staying on the circuit. But realistically, you know, this is how Leclerc goes.
All right, let's move on.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Did you know that McLaren was on screen for precisely 7 minutes of this race? 6 minutes and 58 seconds of that was Daniel Ricciardo. Only 2 seconds showed Lando Norris on screen. All those statistics are made up, but wasn't it amazing how we just didn't see Lando Norris at all, yet he scores this incredible podium, which is broadly on merit? And how come? What happened, Matt? Why have McLaren recovered?
I'm just wondering, who did he forget to send a birthday card to at this point?
In the director's box. But this is it. It's like, it wasn't really a fluke. There was a bit of attrition sort of up at the, he's really behind, but it seemed like a solid performance. They weren't challenging the top three. So he was there for a solid, nailed on merit fourth place.
Yeah, and he did benefit from the Alfa Romeo borked pit stop, which put Bottas 10 seconds behind Russell.
Right.
And kept him from having to really fight with anybody. So he had a pretty lonely race. But what really has struck me is, both from the drivers and the team, there's a different tone about where their car is. And this is the first time this season I've heard it.
Yeah, I think we're all surprised, because Bahrain was such a disaster. And I think that was because they had this brake problem. And if you saw their fix, the original one for Bahrain, they made the cake tins around the brakes. It was a very crudely sort of put together and TIG welded sheathing they put around, which has obviously massively compromised the car. And to be fair to them, in Australia, they were looking pretty handy as well. I think they're just starting to get on top of it. So McLaren were looking pretty quick there as well. And now they're looking pretty quick. And as you say, it's on merit. He wasn't exactly being hounded from behind. So I don't think McLaren should be too surprised of where they are. I think they had a really good car. We just didn't see it in the first race or two.
They did. Although my concern is that both tracks that they've done incredibly well at, so Melbourne and this one at Imola, they're not terribly representative of the rest of the calendar, are they? So the ones that were more representative, maybe before they got ahead on top of their issue, so Bahrain and Jeddah, you know, they were terrible. I mean, they were fighting right at the back in Jeddah. So either they've made dramatic progress, or Imola just suits their car and they'll go back to the back when they get to a normal circuit. I really hope that's not the case. I don't think it will be, but that's just a little niggle in the back of my mind.
And that's a really interesting point. And I think we may be seeing a bit of yo-yoing on performance this year, as teams seem to get on top of their car. But this is two races now in a row where they seem to be up there. So like I said, let's see what they like. Miami's going to be another strange, not very representative track. So when they get to Barcelona, that's going to be the real key.
Yeah, and that brings it back to the tone. Up until now, the Norris has been, we had a good result, but, you know, we're months away from really seeing this car at its maximum. Today, he was like, yeah, no, this car finished about where it should have. You know, we're not as fast as the first two teams, but we are the fastest third team. And Seidel agreed with him, which makes me think that the fix that McLaren has found is one that has put them back up to the top of the midfield.
And finally, on McLaren, you know I'm gunning for Ricciardo in that teammate battle, because I made sure we got everyone's allegiances for every teammate battle set. So are you the same, Carl? You've been gunning for Ricciardo as well. You have to say, you know, Ricciardo, this was an opportunity to score big today. I feel like he threw it away. Whether you think he should have had a penalty or not, I don't think anyone's arguing. He stuffed that. He's thrown that away, and he's ruined chances for points. I don't think he can afford that against Norris. I think he needed to start strong and continue strong. And at the moment, it does look like he's going to be number two to Lando Norris this season. Let's go on to... Oh, no, here we go. Oh, do we have to? All right. Mercedes! All right. Mercedes. Where do we start? Where do we start here? I think firstly we start with George Russell. Any confessed George Russell fans on the panel? Carl, you'd better be a George Russell fan because I lobbied for and you've done well at being BBC Radio Cambridge's F1 call-in pundit because Cambridge is claiming him as being Cambridgeshire educated. Even though on the commentary they keep saying Wisbeach born, but Cambridge educated, both counties are claiming him.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, we've stuck a flag on him, so it's ours. I'd definitely be claiming it.
I don't think Norfolk have even got a radio station, so...
Oh, indeed. And it means I get to go on the radio and talk about Formula One. I'm a big George fan.
So even though he had the good result the last time out, that was, I think, fairly credited to Hamilton being unlucky on the safety car. The not concern, but, it was pretty much looking like, well, Hamilton's had the measure of him throughout each weekend, qualifying, race pace generally. And, it's not a time to be concerned because you'd expect someone to come in with Lewis Hamilton and not necessarily be immediately on pace. When's the last time that happened? But you needed, if it was 4 weekends, 5 weekends, 6 weekends of the same, reputation starts to take a dive, morale starts to take a dive. He needed a weekend like this, and he got it, where he was better than Hamilton in every single session.
Yeah, as you said, this is the first sort of weekend where he's well and truly outperformed Lewis significantly all weekend. Yeah, in Jeddah, they tried the setup thing with Lewis. But again, in the race, George was really solid. In Australia, yes, he was a bit down on Lewis on pace and was quite fortunate to get his position. But this weekend, take nothing away. Like, he absolutely nailed it. And I was really disappointed in Hamilton's performance. But I think it's detracting and taking away the attention from how great a job George did. And I was really sorry for him. In his post sort of race interviews,
he was apologetic.
There was like everyone was like, oh, but your teammate is like really struggling.
So what?
I know. Well, and I felt sorry for George. George just sat there like, hang on, I've just driven the shit.
I know. It was a weird one. It was like, a weird question. It was a weird question. I think because people are unaccustomed to seeing Lewis Hamilton down in 13th fighting. But when the guys finished fourth, he's the best driver of the day. He's finished, 9, 10 places above his teammate. Forget about what the teammate did. Focus in on the job he did.
Absolutely. And it wasn't like he just lucked into a position and wobbled through to get it. He was fighty. He was fighty.
Great
past
start.
Magnificent.
Great start.
Really great start and really fighty. And he had the fight in him that Lewis didn't this weekend. Lewis looked meek and mild and didn't want to take a risk, whereas George was happy to really lay it on the line and take a risk on the brakes.
I'll argue a little with that.
Whereas Lewis wasn't. Look at George's first attempt at passing Magnussen. He absolutely launched it really late on the brakes. And that's something Lewis, you can see behind Gasly, was just not prepared to do.
Absolutely. And you could argue that Lewis was caught in a bit of a slipstreaming train because it wasn't a DRS train because there was no DRS on most of the race. But you could argue that Gasly's top speed also was a little bit better than Lewis because of that. But that being said, I want to just point out that George Russell is the only driver to have finished in the top five in every single race this year.
Yeah, Tim Rudd's just pointed out he's finished fourth, fifth, third and fourth. Although obviously Hamilton's had good results around that. And the third, there was obviously the luck with the safety car, but he still would have finished in the top five there and not affected your stat. I think broadly we need to treat these two things separately. A, Hamilton having a shocker and B, Russell having a really good race. But still, clearly, the potential of that car in normal circumstances wasn't a fourth place finish. So neither driver will really be happy. But from a damage limitation point of view, again, Mercedes have picked up a good result. The thing where I want to slightly defend what Kyle was saying, because first it was Hamilton bias, etc., etc. But I'll put up the defense. The starting positions obviously made a huge difference. And the margin in the first run of Q2 was what decided it. Obviously, you would normally have more runs in Q2, but the rain came down. And from that, everything widened. Hamilton was stuck in that train. He then had a bad pit stop, not his fault, which he would have been 10th. I think he was 10th going into that pit stop. went down to 14th after, you know, a 5 second pit stop, got hit by Ocon again, ruining everything, Matt. So, you know, you could have seen that could easily have been a seventh place if you look at how the rest of the race shuffled out and how Bottas moved up the pack. But yeah, so I wanted to mitigate that because you were saying, well, Hamilton didn't look fighty in that he couldn't get past Gasly. The only overtake Russell did was against Magnussen, whose tyres were dead. But I wonder what you think of that overtake, Matt, because it did look, I'm not being a Russell hater, it did look like rough into turn one. The overtake looked done, and then he went over the curves and stuffed it, and yep. Magnussen came back. So it was far from clean. Yeah, anyway.
So I just want to say, first of all, I feel like Russell did get lucky today. I think that sixth was in the cards for him at best.
Matt at MissedApex.net.
But one, you had Leclerc drive off the circuit into the wall, five laps
yeah,
from the
course.
End,
yeah,
which
yeah,
gifted
sure.
him a place. And then you had Bottas pit behind him at less than a second and emerged 10 seconds behind
yeah,
him.
Yeah, yeah, as well.
Which pretty much let him drive around in clean air.
And then obviously Sainz and Ricciardo as well. So that's a handful of places. So,
secondly, if we're going to talk about Hamilton, you've already very cleverly pointed out that Hamilton started on the evens side of the grid.
I didn't,
therefore,
but is that right?
Yeah,
so
he did.
Okay.
Yeah,
yes.
He had an even spot. Russell had an odd spot.
See, so, Kyle, see.
So yeah. Right off the bat, you can't expect the same start from him. Nevertheless, and despite the woes that he in particular has had from Mercedes about getting his tires into the window, he worked his way all the way up to 11th, which is not terrible. I mean, he was stuck behind Stroll, which, to be fair, if you're passing Stroll in the wet into turn one, you are taking, I think, maybe your car's life into your hands.
Don't go up
at
the inside.
That point.
Don't go up the inside.
Yeah, exactly, right? And then the pit stop, he got bollocks by two things. One, you had Vettel, Albon, and Gasly pit a lap earlier. So they had hot tires.
Oh, I'm slightly going to blame Hamilton for that, though, because he was given the option to do it and he chose not to.
What he said on the radio clearly was that it's too slippery out here, which tells you how bad that car was driving for him, because other drivers clearly had a different opinion. And if you watched his out of the pits, which I did, he lost, coming out of the pits, he probably lost about six car lengths to the car he was directly behind, just trying to get out of the pits. Whatever Mercedes did to his car, they couldn't even get close to getting those tires to the correct temperature relative to a lot of the other people he was fighting with. And that was a major problem for them this weekend.
Yeah, he was massively struggling. And it looked like a driver who had zero confidence in the car under braking. Like on one of his 3 million moves on Gasly into turn one, he wasn't prepared to brake late to even get overlapped. And even on one of the occasions he did brake early, he still lost the rear on entry. And this is one of Mercedes' problems, is with the porpoising going into the braking zone, the Ferrari looks like it porpoises worse, but sorts itself out. The Mercedes isn't reattaching. It isn't sorting itself out and very unstable, which is why I thought Russell's move on Magnussen, the first aborted one, was even more oppressive, because the car's not stable clearly under braking and he's still took the risk and actually went for it. And so, but it looked like Lewis just didn't have the fight in him. There were several times where he could have got on and tried one of these late braking moves to get overlapped of Gasly, even to wrong foot him into turn one. And he just braked really early. He just backed out, but he didn't even bother. And that just shows how unconfident he is. And this is not what we expect to see from a 7-time world champion. We expect him to even to take the risks and just to go for it and take it. But he just seemed reluctant to put it on the line today.
Just very quickly, I think Gasly positioned his car very well into turn one defending. So he defended well, as I just want to put that out there. And he had the Honda to defend with as well. And Tsunoda also with that Honda was able to defend well also.
He did. But also on a race like this, when we saw it was something that we would have criticized Bottas for. It was a very Bottas get stuck, can't move through the field type of performance that we saw in the last couple of years, and we would have hammered Bottas for that. So in the sort of game of fairness, I think Lewis does deserve a little bit of stick for that, because it was very un-Lewis like, and it wasn't. You know, I kept thinking, it's going to happen soon. He's going to suddenly come alive, and it's going to happen soon, and it never did.
Most of the grief we gave Bottas though was for not defending. I'll just slightly clarify, but I think your point stands.
Yeah, not having the fight or making the aggressive moves, and Hamilton put his put his old school Bottas cap on today, and it was Bottas who was looking fighty in the race. It was just such a, everything's turned
all right,
on its head.
Kyle, you can't just go around calling everyone Bottas. Trumpets.
Well, I don't know. I can't fault Hamilton. If you don't have the grip, you can't outbrake the person ahead of you. And to me, the problem is 100% the tires. Whatever setup they've put on his car, however they set up the brakes, where they put the calipers, how they've designed the heat transfer. When Lewis is in cold temperatures with this car, the tires do not get up to temperature. And I'll just say, go back and watch him leave the pits. It's like he's driving on ice. It's not like he's sitting back and being unconfident. It's like that's just where the limit of that car was today. And that's on Mercedes. And Toto got on the radio and apologized for it. So I see where you're coming from, but I'm going to defend Hamilton in this instance.
I think Hamilton's got a lot to answer for in terms of that he wasn't doing what he did in Brazil last year when he came through the field in a wet race where he was trying different lines and it was a masterclass in how to overtake. Whereas here, he every single time he got back on the back of Gasly, he kind of feigned to the outside slightly, couldn't get, as you said, didn't have the confidence on the brakes, but there was no variety in what he was doing. Gasly could just cover him off the same way every single time.
Lewis Hamilton fighting for 13th is very different to Lewis Hamilton fighting for a podium. And like, you can almost physically see the head down, and it must be sort of difficult from fighting for a championship to then be trying to fight Gasly for 13th place. I get what you're driving at. I think my mitigation to that, Catman, would be Brazil is an easier track to overtake on and a different track to try different lines, especially the final corner where he was so good in the sprint race, working his way through, getting trapped behind Vettel, then trying a completely different approach, breaking a lot earlier to get up the hill. So I think this is a different challenge. But I think Kyle and Catman, I think you've both got a point. Like, the body language of the car and his approach does feel different when he's back there.
Even the best in the world. So back in 2006, we had Schumacher versus Alonso, and no matter what Schumacher did, he couldn't get past Alonso. So you do have a point in that Imola is a difficult track to pass on. And it must have been absolutely galling for him to be lapped by Max as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that even as a neutral, that hurt, Kyle.
But yeah, it was his whole sort of demeanor and the interviews during the weekend. He come across to me as a bit vulnerable and a bit down, and he clearly outwardly expressed that he's down. Yes, and that's one thing I like about Lewis. He wears his heart on his sleeve. But in times like this, and just thinking back, I didn't ever see sort of Schumacher getting down. It was like, yeah, we're here, we're going to fight him out of it. I think Lewis this weekend, I would like to see more sort of defiance and like, no, we're here, let's go and do it. Whereas we got, oh, the car's really bad, I'm really struggling and we can't do it, and I don't know how we're going to get out of this. I wanted to see more resolve.
So I know this is probably wrong, but I've had this feeling with Hamilton before, where when he feels like the car is not doing what he's done, or that he was ignored, or that something went wrong, or the luck went against him, it's almost like, this is definitely wrong. But I get this weird feeling that he wants it to then be bad, so he can go, see, it was bad, I'm not crazy. And I know that's not going to be accurate, but I hope you know what I'm trying to say, Matt.
Yeah, well, it tends to put you down a certain path. And let's remember, this really does go back to Friday, when he had a disagreement with the team about the qualifying tactics, where he wanted to stay out to get the tires hot and the team wanted him in for a new set. And we've seen, certainly in Spa in the past, where coming in and putting fresh tires on when the track is damp is not always the best idea when you're in a Mercedes.
And this is what I'm finding so surprising about it. And I can hark back to a 2010 interview with Jenson Button when he moved into McLaren. And they were asking him, what's the thing that impressed you most about Lewis as a teammate? And he said, he goes, what he can do with an unbalanced car. When the car's horrible, I struggle. And Lewis can just go and drive anything. And this is why I'm so surprised. I expected Lewis to excel with a really difficult car. And he has done before. Look back to 2009, the McLaren. And this is why I'm getting a bit worried. Where's that fight gone?
I don't think the fight is gone. I think we're looking at a problem with grip, not a problem with balance. And the way Russell drives a car, or the way Mercedes sets it up for him, or the way he likes it set up, is favoring better tire warm-up But then we see in Australia, when it's hot, Lewis has better tire management and better pace. It's just the natural trade-off of the Formula One engineering.
I think talk of Lewis Hamilton's demise may have been greatly exaggerated. It is one race, and I think had Hamilton in that Q2 ended up ahead of Russell, you know, we'd have seen, you know, much different results. But he didn't. Russell did the job. He got out and he set that time in Q2, and it ended up being decisive, and he had a much easier run today and took the chance against an ailing, retired Magnussen. He eventually took that chance and went and got a good result. So that's all on Russell. And I think what we've seen today is a combination of Russell on a good day with the rubber of the green and Lewis Hamilton on a bad day with the rubber of the green and not taking it particularly well. I think the gap might be exaggerated. The track may have helped exaggerating that, but it's real. So yeah, well done, George Russell. A couple of other well done's, as I'm aware of the time here. Very quickly, I think Bottas, very, very good. Without that pit stop, Bottas could have, I think he might have finished fourth. I think fourth was on the cards. You think third, Matt? You think a podium?
I didn't get a chance to look at the gaps, but yeah, he was only a second behind Russell going into the pit stops. And I will tell you, yeah. I think that Alpha was definitely faster than that Mercedes. And he would have had a chance to dice with Norris for an extended period for the last podium spot once Leclerc, of course, drove off the...
That's mad, isn't it? Alfa Romeo looking proper good. And like, no one's ever thought Bottas is not a really good driver. He was up against statistically the greatest driver of all time. So maybe we're going to see a resurgent Bottas. It didn't work out this time, so maybe we don't linger on it. But I think it's one to watch. I think we can see him in his Alfa Romeo and Magnussen in that Haas as well, doing well. Kyle, slightly negative. Schumacher, how many data points? I know you're a fan of Little Mick, but how many data points do we need of spins? With Mazepin in that Haas, we all said, oh, well, look, they're both spinning. It's a terrible car. He's not looking good against Magnussen. He's dropped it twice today.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with being wrong. And okay. I have backed Mick, and I do really, really want him to do well. But and I initially said when they announced Magnussen, I thought that was a bad thing. I would have liked Piastri to get the drive, but I've very much eaten my hat on that. I'm full up with it, and I'm not unhappy. Magnussen has done an amazing job, and yeah, Mick is being a little bit shown up. It was a bit unfortunate what happened in Jeddah, because he was looking really quick in Jeddah. But again, the other races we've seen, Magnussen has completely outclassed him, and Mick had a scruffy race. He actually had a really aggressive start, and he almost pulled off an amazing overtake of several cars, but just lost it. That's what dinked Alonso's side pod, unfortunately. And then he had another spin during the race. Yeah. Mick needs to outperform Magnussen very, very soon. But I'm happy to be wrong on it. Magnussen has just, well, he's banked him, really, hasn't he?
Yep. Matt.
So first of all, I'm going to say I'm just treating this as Schumacher's actual rookie year, because last year was just a waste of time.
For both drivers.
Yeah. Having said that, Kyle, your willingness to admit you're wrong about anything is probably one of the reasons you're not on the show more.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, this is not the Missed Apex way. How dare you? This is absolutely awful. But hey, look, you know, the hope is not gone. All I'm thinking is, from a career point of view, we tend to treat these guys like boxers. You know, like we match them up, and if they take a big defeat, we kind of go, oh, maybe they're not the boxer we thought they were. I think Schumacher being beaten by Magnussen in his second season might prove existential. I like Magnussen, but not everyone rates him as a top talent, and perhaps getting beaten by Magnussen isn't the best thing for your career. Both AlphaTauri drivers, I think, did well, defended well, but we're seeing the different types of cars might be skewing our view. So I'm thinking out loud here, but for example, Magnussen is looking particularly good compared to the rest of the field because it looks like Haas are out-qualifying themselves. If that makes sense. There's certain cars that are performing much better in qualifying than they are during the race. Perhaps McLaren, they're looking like a higher competitive team when they're doing well in qualifying, even when they've been down the grid a little bit. Mercedes have abandoned qualifying as a concept. They basically have written it off, trying to get something for race pace. And you could argue that if you look at Russell's results, all in the top five, That tactic has kind of worked from a damage limitation point of view. So it's quite hard to tease out who's doing well and who isn't.
Yeah, and also, and this goes back to the Hamilton thing, that it's actually, you know, you could argue that it's easier for George to come from a shed and jump into another shed than it is from somebody who's been driving a five-star hotel and then suddenly ends up in a shed.
We made the same argument, didn't we, Matt, when Verstappen moved to Red Bull against Ricciardo.
Yeah, and I do want to point out, because this is a pattern that I see between Leclerc and Sainz, between Verstappen and Perez, and between Russell and Hamilton. In general, Hamilton's had better race pace, and he's been able to, and that's because he manages the tires better in the race, but that means he stresses them less. In cold and in wet, driving more aggressively puts more heat in the tires and gives you more grip. And we've seen Leclerc able to switch on one lap tires where Sainz takes two. And I think there may be some stylistic differences at play as well that particularly disadvantaged Hamilton in this race.
I'll counter that with saying that Hamilton traditionally has been awesome in the wet and has been able to adapt his driving style to that. I give you Silverstone 08, for example, where he can just light it up where nobody else can. So I don't think it's that Hamilton is stuck in his ways or that he doesn't have that in his locker, but he just isn't able to unlock it in this car.
Oh, we might all be being a bit previous here. Anyway, a fascinating chapter in the F1 2022 season. Just like the Australian Grand Prix, where we said, well, this is not really representative, let's not jump to conclusions, then spent an hour jumping to conclusions. I think we can say the same thing about a intermediate wet track sprint weekend Imola Grand Prix, which is, let's not jump to conclusions, even though we've spent an hour jumping to conclusions, Kyle.
And also, it's Imola. Have you seen the actual track layout? I mean, that was about as good a race as you can possibly expect. Last year, the rain saved Imola and everyone was like, oh, we had a dramatic race because of the rain. This year, it somewhat did it. Again, when you look at it on paper, it's a track that you wouldn't have thought, regardless of the rule sets, was going to throw up good racing. It's fast, it's narrow, and the cars are huge. So the fact that we got racing at all, I thought was really good. I thought for an Imola Grand Prix, that was a really good race.
Okay, I'm less enthusiastic. Perhaps we can end on actually how much we enjoyed the weekend, regardless of whether the driver you support did well or not. I have some issues. I have some problems with the weekend. I feel like, yes, we had a nice mixed up grid from qualifying, and that happens sometimes. In every qualifying session, you get someone who's dropped down the grid and someone who's slightly out of position or a little surprised, or someone's nicked the pole by prioritizing their quali setup. And then you see that unfold in the race. And with the sprint weekend, all of that is undone in the sprint race. And we've had four sprint races so far. Yeah, two have been dull because there was no mix-up in the initial quali. So they've been dull because it's just been the first stint of a race and then a forced red flag overnight. We had Brazil, where Hamilton got a penalty for... What did he get a penalty for? The wind blowing the wrong way through his rear wing. So he had to start at the back, and that made it exciting because we got to watch him do that. But without that, it was a dud. This weekend, we had a really mixed-up qualifying, so that's great. And the sprint race was the best sprint race so far, with a very low bar, but it undid all the stuff from the Friday and gave us a much more settled grid for the Saturday. So, Kyle, from a sporting point of view, I don't see what we're achieving.
I completely and wholeheartedly agree.
Yes.
I've been vehemently against the sprint format. Now, look, I'll need to preface this with the fact that yes, it was exciting watching a race on Saturday, but the fact that it generally pales to insignificance when you get to the Sunday, you completely get that. It's curing a problem that didn't exist. None of us asked for it. It all of a sudden come in, and it's just clumsy. The statistics don't really work out. The rules don't really work out. And also, I find it undermines the other Grand Prix. This is reminding me of the 2014 Abu Dhabi double points. Why are these sprint weekends suddenly more valuable when there's more points? Someone, I think it was Doug Beattie on Twitter, made an extremely good point during the week saying, what happens if one of the drivers gets COVID and it happens to be a sprint weekend? They're penalized more for just missing that weekend, or they have like a mechanical failure. Either do it for all of the races or don't do it at all. This has been hand-fistedly and clumsily implemented to solve a problem that was not there. Now, qualifying, what was wrong with it? What was wrong with the previous format? Grand Prix, the clues in the name, the big prize, the big race.
I think literally only Sebastian Vettel is testing for COVID. I don't think anyone else is bothering. Matt.
I hate that thing I enjoyed on the Saturday. How dare they make me entertained? Those miserable, terrible people. They did something entertaining and I like to watch it. And I hate that. I hate it.
Kyle, counter.
Let's just go NASCAR then. Let's have 50 races and water down the main event.
Done. Catman.
One thing that the sprint race would have done was it would have allowed Carlos Sainz to have got back to the front of the grid. And then he would have been able to have supported his teammate and have a battle with the Red Bulls at the front. So it does, in very limited circumstances, give you the opportunity that if someone has absolutely wrecked their first qualifying session, to be able to
Start in championship order every race then. Matt.
I don't really care about that. The one point that I do want to make, in all seriousness, is we're sitting here going, we're very, very focused on the sporting aspect of it. And there are lots of very legitimate criticisms.
You're going to say money.
But what I'm going to say is
money.
Is there not a problem that is perhaps being solved that is just simply out of our purview? And that is the business side of the equation. Money. And I've made this argument before. Look, would you rather have a sprint race on a Saturday a couple of times a year? Or would you rather have reverse grid Sunday Grand Prix? I mean, you know, it's
not one reverse grid.
They're going to business. The business people are going to business and there's not much you can do about it.
I'd rather have a Grand Prix weekend.
Just a normal one.
Just a normal one. This is a problem. We're fixing a problem that doesn't exist. It's not a money. It costs the teams more money. Hence, they've reduced them down to three this year because they're already 23 races and now they have to do extra sprints, which is extra cost for the teams. Even the guy who won the sprints isn't a fan of the sprints. And yes. One of Ross Bourne's comment of coming out is like, how about sticking your fingers in your ears and screaming la, la, la a bit louder? He's just dismissing all the thing. It's like they're trying to force a round peg through a square hole. They're not giving up and they're just reaching for a bigger hammer when it doesn't fit.
I disagree. I think they're looking at something we're not seeing, honestly. And if you were solving a problem, there are worse solutions than having qualifying Friday, a race on Saturday, and another race on Sunday.
I want to hear from Catman.
I was just going to say that grid ahead of the feature race would have been excellent. Yeah. You'd have had much more strategic options. It would have been much more exciting.
Kyle.
Like, Formula One isn't exactly scraping around trying to nick 20p off you outside the co-op. You know, they are making an awful lot of money and the money's not really going to the teams. I think the money argument is a complete fallacy, really. And I just don't know where this comes from. You know, who was moaning about the format before we knew about these sprint races? Like, I don't think anybody was particularly unhappy with the format and it's not solving anything. And if you can't, what other top flight sport has a varying structure and format depending on which round it seems to be? This is the thing. It's just not very Formula One, is it?
All I'm going to say is you're just forgetting about how much debt Formula One was saddled with when CVC finally sold it off. They leveraged the absolute beans out of that to pay off their shareholders. And Liberty took that on. If they have to do this to make back their money and to keep control overall, again, I'm just saying there are worse things that could happen.
So far, with the sprint races, if the qualifying has been mixed up, now let's do it the other way. If the qualifying has been standard and we've started off fast cars at the front all the way down to the slower cars, the sprint race has been boring. When cars have been out of position, the sprint race has been fine, but that's taken away some of the action that we were going to get on Sunday. So far, that's the story of the sprint races. Is that going to change? Is that going to get any better? I'm not seeing the point right now. Feedback@missedapex.net. Spanners@missedapex.net. We genuinely love your feedback. Champagne! Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez complete a dominant and well-earned Ferrari... No, got a reaction there because it was Imola. Red Bull 1-2. The team has massively outperformed the grid. They've done everything perfectly and their competitors behind them have frankly dropped the ball. Sorry to Fosse, but your drivers both dropped the ball over the course of the weekend. Carlos Sainz found himself fighting from the back on Saturday and then fighting from a suboptimal position on the... He should not have been fighting with a McLaren on the Sunday grid into turn one at all. And then Charles Leclerc, with a chance to settle for third place, be on the podium at Imola, pick up points and push forward with his title, took too much curb, in his own words, got too greedy. At the moment, it looks like Red Bull are the championship unit, even though Ferrari might have the overall, on paper, better package. We've got a great season ahead of us. Miami, again, a track that isn't going to be representative. We've had Australia, not representative. A intermediate condition. Imola, not representative. We're going to have Miami, a street circuit that we don't know anything about, where just there's going to be lots of shirtless people lifting weights up and down. That's all we know about the Miami Grand Prix. So we have the most unpredictable season, probably since 2012. Ahead of us. There's a lot to look forward to. I hope you'll spend some of that journey here with Missed Apex Podcast. We try and do a live stream after the races at 8 p.m. When the races allow. If they're later, we'll just do them later. When's Miami, Matt? What sort of time's Miami? Are we going to have to stay up late?
I want to say it is 1800 your hours, if I remember correctly.
Well, that's not too bad, Kyle. We can handle that.
8 p.m.
Oh, 8 p.m.
So 8 p.m. or 8:30, so you can be having your chips, beans and gravy.
Oh, okay.
While you watch it.
Okay, that's fine. So the race review will probably be around midnight, and I will assemble a panel of Americans and Australians and the people who are wired and awake and drinking anyway at that time. Kyle, you free for Miami?
I might be passed out through alcohol consumption by that point.
Coming up this week, we're going to do some pre-recorded content for Sunday, because, of course, we're going to be at the Missed Apex karting event at Ella Park on that Sunday. So it is going to be we're going to try and catch up with Sean Kelly. We keep clashing with the football schedule. We're going to hear from, I think, Magnus Greaves in the week. Hear about a bit about US F1. Of course, he runs Race Weekend magazine, and me and Matt are going to catch up in person, I think, on the Sunday, a bit hungover in the hotel, and we're going to put together some content, and then I'm going to stagger to the shed and I'm just going to press the buttons and play out the pre-records and just say hello and check in and that'll be good. But we've got some awards. First of all, we've got the thing of the weekend. Catman, what was your thing of the weekend?
There were so many good things this weekend, and I know a lot of people on Twitter were saying that it was really boring, but I thought it was a fascinating weekend. The thing for me was the cars just being able to follow each other so closely around this terrible circuit. For following. It made it much more interesting than it would have been. Imagine if this had happened last year.
Kyle, what was your thing of the weekend?
My thing of the weekend is the perceived number twos doing really well. So obviously George Russell and a bit of Yuki love.
Oh, yeah,
Yuki
yeah,
did really, really well, and he was on top of Gasly. So it was George Russell and Yuki putting their team number ones to shame.
Matt, two rumpets.
Valtteri Bottas, for all the haters last season, showing you that maybe, just maybe, he wasn't as awful, terrible, and disastrous as you all thought he was.
I'm going to give my thing of the weekend to the Red Bull pit wall, because they seem to just be managing everything. You could even in the face of like drivers going, no, bug off, I'm fine, leave me alone. And in the sprint race, there was a magnificent moment really with Verstappen, because we don't do the pony anymore, but Verstappen like basically saying, don't speak to me ever, don't speak to me at all, I never ever want to be spoken to, and then berating the team for going, is the race finished? No one told me it finished. But I just really feel like the pit wall just managed everything. And when you've got a star like Max Verstappen, like Lewis Hamilton, sometimes you just have to absorb and be calm. So in the same way that Bono does that with Lewis Hamilton, I don't know who is Max Verstappen's pit engineer, wall engineer, race engineer. Anyone know the name?
I was at Piero what's he called? I can't remember his name.
Yeah. Anyway, great job from the Red Bull pit wall overall managing all of that. So that's my thing of the weekend. Oh, we've all been super positive, haven't we? It's time we go toxic.
Oh no, you missed the apex.
Yeah, this is where we gain our followers, guys. This is where we go full outrageous, full beans. Let's be super negative. Catman, you go on Twitter. Chris Catman Turner. No, at Catman F1. Oh, there we go. @CatmanF1. And your TikTok is?
Oh, I'm too old for TikTok, mate. Guys,
I told you, we have TikTokers on the show now. We're all meant to have TikTok accounts.
I'll leave that to Van Gene. He can TikTok away. He can dance to watching Lewis Hamilton the failing.
Literally no one else done it. I thought we were all doing it. Missed Apex Award, Catman.
Again, there were so many things that could deserve this award this weekend. For me, though, it's just the disappointment that I have in Carlos Sainz. I want him to do well. I really do. He deserves this chance, and he is fluffing it. This is a championship-winning car, and he's nowhere. He's just binning it all the time. He needs to just keep it on the circuit, and then he'll do well.
Even if you have to do some Perez-style yielding, lap one, turn one. All right, Kyle, @KylePowerF1. Follow him. Lots of hot takes from Kyle. And he used to have a magnificent beard. Now you have a very evil, only the very goatee. What style is that? Where you've just got the very end of your chin beard.
I think some people have referred to it as a Brazilian.
A Brazilian. That is accurate. @KylePowerF1. Who missed the apex for you?
I'm really sorry. I have praised him loads, and I will give praise where it is deserved, and I will also give criticism where it is deserved.
Don't do it.
It is Lewis Hamilton.
No, Kyle, no.
Sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry. It was his whole weekend performance and general sort of demeanor. But again, like, not all is lost, and I've got faith, but just this weekend was a bit of a blip.
How many Grand Prix has he started?
So many that I don't know the stats. So yeah, quite a lot. So you're allowed to drop the ball every now and then. It's just had the off two weekend. In four races
odd,
so far.
The odd off weekend. Yeah, you're right there though. Matt, two rumpets @MattPT55. All the links to everyone's Twitter and social media is in the show notes below, wherever you're consuming this. Matt, who missed the apex for you?
Oh, I mean, this is a tough one. I'm almost tempted to say Catman's pick for missed the apex for me, because I think he's completely wrong. Sainz, yeah, he stuffed it a bit in quali, but it was so not his fault in turn one. But
you're such an apologist.
If if I'm really going to go there, if there was a team or a driver that missed the apex, I'm going to say Latifi. I look at what Albon did. I look at what Latifi did, and I'm just left bereft. I feel like he's a better driver than what he's showing us right now. So please don't take this the wrong way. If you're really a Latifi fan, which would be just Stevens, I think.
He didn't cause a safety car. What more do you want?
He barely didn't cause a safety car, but he didn't do anything. Look at Albon and what he did with his car. Look at where Latifi wound up. And I feel like he's just lost confidence and needs to regain it. I don't think Hamilton's lost confidence. I think Hamilton's like, this is how much grip I have, and this is the best I can do. But Latifi, I feel like, needs a good result to get his mind back in the right place.
Okay. I don't see where that good result is coming from.
Well, that's a different problem.
The reason he's not done as well as Albon has done is because Albon's a top talent, maybe just 1.5 tier. Top talent? Just off the top tier? You think he's top tier, Catman?
No.
One down?
I think he's a tier two.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, tier two's fair. I would put him maybe tier two as well. I was
not a 1.5, tier two.
We were comparing him to Latifi. I don't think Latifi is in that ranking. He's not on the scale. He's an out-and-out paid driver. So, sorry, Matt, I like your enthusiasm, but I don't see where that good result is going to come from. Are we doing the good award or the bad award? It's the bad one, isn't it, at the moment? No one's giving it to Leclerc. Sorry, it's got to go to Charles Leclerc. I mean, mostly because I'm wishing him so well this season so that he can beat Max Verstappen, but not like that.
Sorry, it's the missed apex award. His problem was he just hit it too hard.
No, he flew over it. Nothing, no part of the car touched that apex. Got to cut that out. I said it earlier, didn't I? You've got to cut that out if you're going to be world champion this year, Charles. This is not a rookie year. This is not a build-up year. This is not a reputation-gaining year with the third-best car. You're in a championship-winning car now. This is it. This is your shot. Don't blow it. He listens to this, right? He must do. Must listen to this. Right, guys, that has been a fantastic race review. Please do follow our panel and maybe even consider supporting us on Patreon. Patreon.com/missedapex. there's a little bit of extra content. We've really enjoyed doing our doom scrolling shows where we talk about some non-F1 stuff as well. We're doing them every 2 weeks, and then join us in our Patreon forums as well. If you don't want to support us financially, please tell your friends that you enjoy Missed Apex being a part of your F1 experience. Tweet, tell the world, missedapex.net is the link to share, and they will be greeted with some audio and video options as well, so they can immediately see whether Missed Apex is for them. Until we see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.